Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Book Cheat, the book club podcast where I've read the book so you don't have to. My name is Dave Warnocky, and on each episode of this show, we look at one of the classics. And joining me to look at such a classic this week is one of my best buds in the whole wide world. You know him from Do Go On, Primates, Listen Now, and Who Knew It with Matt Stewart. Who knew it? It's Matt Stewart.
Hey Dave, thanks so much for having me on the show. Love this show. Love the book chook. Love being in the hen house.
Hey, it's a true pleasure to have you. You with your growing list of podcasts there.
Yeah, I know. It sounds pretty ridiculous when you put them all together. But yeah.
Not exciting. With
Matt Stewart, the brand new podcast coming out very soon.
Yes, tell us a little bit about Who Knew It with Matt Stewart.
Well, it was for a real boon. I got the one and only Dave Warnocky for episode one. and as well as Jess Perkins and Saran Jayamana, and we basically it's a bit of a bluffing game. There's a question, an obscure trivia question. Then the guests have to write fake answers, and then somehow figure out which one is the real answer. And it's a bit of fun.
It is of fun because sometimes you take it really seriously and you come up with a very serious answer, and other times people wrote the most ridiculous stuff. And I've never seen Matt break more than during the recordings of that show.
Yeah, I can't. I feel like I break nearly every time we record it, but I'll get stronger.
I love it. And if people want to see you do that show live, and I'll be there too, you and I are coming up to Brisbane next week. If you listen to this hot off the presses.
Yes. So it's a brand new show, and we're already doing it live. So
that's how confident you are.
Well, yeah, well, it's funny because I have done it live three times before, twice under the banner of Primates and once for a bonus episode for the Do Go On Patreon supporters. And it's always gone really well. So those live shows are probably what made me realize that it was a fun show that people would like and I like doing. So yeah, the live shows are particularly fun, I think.
Yeah. And, oh man, it's such a fun live show. People get really, really into it.
And you're going to be a guest on it again on that live episode, Dave, as well as a local comedian or someone who's up in Brisbane at the time. And yeah, I'm doing it back to back with Book Cheat. So you can, listeners want to come along to one, they come along to both if they want to, at the Good Chat Comedy Club in Brisbane.
Fantastic. These are both on the 24th of September 2022. Do the double.
And you're also doing, you're making a stand-up comedy comeback as well, Dave.
That's right. The big comebacks special, which I have called the Matt Stewart Comedy Hour.
With Dave Warnocky. People have been begging for it. But that's why, you know, just to make sure it wasn't too big of a... We didn't want to crash the internet or anything, so that's why we've hidden you a little bit in the title.
That's right, exactly. Obviously, the Good Chat Comedy Club website can only take so many clicks, so we've had to bury me down there. Because we are doing all these shows at Good Chat, the comedy venue to the stars up in Brisbane. The 23rd and the 24th are the stand-up shows at night, and the 24th is an afternoon of our podcast. Because you may notice we've gone into the plugs earlier here, and I will fully admit that this is a bonus episode because I announced a Book Cheat live tour on the east coast of Australia last week, Matt. But somehow my thing that I put at the start of the episode failed. So when we were in Sydney last week for gigs, people said, oh, you've got to bring Book Cheat up. I was like, I'm coming, don't you know? And no one knew. So no one knows that I am doing some live Book Cheat shows. So this is a bonus episode brought to you by us telling you that I am doing some shows in Brisbane. I'm going to be there on the 24th of September. Then I'm going to be in Melbourne. Ever heard of it? the 15th of October at the European Beer Cafe for an afternoon gig. And then finally, Sydney the week after, Saturday afternoon, the 22nd of October. And I would love to see people there, Matt. That's my thing. I love performing to people.
Yeah, people make their live shows look better.
Yeah, they really do. They really,
and
really do.
I saw you in one of those conversations in Sydney where someone said, oh, we didn't realize you were coming up, and I could see your little heartbreak.
Yes, it was like, oh, no. No, people don't know. So, yeah, you can get tickets to all these shows and all the upcoming, even if you're listening to this way into the future, you want to check if Book Cheat, Do Go On, Who Knew It With Matt Stewart, is on the road. You can go to dogoonpod.com and click on live shows. That's how you get all the tickets.
Yes. And if you're, I mean, if you're a Patreon supporter, you'll hear about it first and get discounted tickets as well.
That's right.
No pressure, but I'm just saying it's an option.
Yeah.
And if you do that, you're supporting shows like Book Cheat, Do Go On, Who Knew It With Matt Stewart, Primates, etc., the whole bloody thing. Your bonus episodes and all sorts of stuff. But yeah, you also get, you know, you're the first to hear about Book Cheat coming to Sydney or wherever. Or London. I think you told people, the Londoners heard about your Book Cheat show before everyone else, didn't they, Dave?
Yeah, well in advance. Like, you get first dibs, cheap tickets. It's good stuff.
That's patreon.com/dogoonpod. It's weird for me to be doing the plugs on your show, Dave. I apologize for that.
Hey, you're great. You're my right-hand man with the plugs. Now that's out the way. I'm going to go solo if you don't mind.
Okay.
No, I'm here to tell you about a very famous short story, Matt.
Okay.
This week. It's actually been called the most popular short story ever written in English.
Whoa.
To pump it up a little bit. I am, of course, talking about...
Is it the picture most... book?
Yes, no. Unbelievably not.
Yes, no.
Yeah. It's not that short, okay. But it's quite short. It is The Most Dangerous Game.
Ooh. Chess.
Well, you put your life on the line every time you pick up that bishop.
Monopoly.
That's actually...
Am I warmer?
Yeah, honestly, because that is a dangerous game, especially in my household where people take it very seriously.
With good reason. You're playing for fake money.
I'm, of course, talking about The Most Dangerous Game, the story by Richard Connell. Have you ever heard of this?
No. Richard Connell. Richard Connell doesn't ring a bell. Is he a famous author?
Long time. He's been around a long time. This is his most famous thing, but it was first published in Collier's Magazine back on January 19, 1924.
I love how a lot of classic stories have these, you know, kind of whatever the opposite of illustrious is, beginnings. Because they, yeah, you'll hear of all sorts, like all the Sherlock Holmes stories, and they end up, or didn't they begin as serial, like magazine serials or something?
Yeah, totally. And also Charles Dickens writing Week to Week.
Yeah.
In sort of these magazines, the equivalent of the 19th century Playboy.
It's so interesting.
But Richard Connell started his writing career at a very young age. He was just 13 when he started reporting on a murder trial for his father's newspaper.
How old, 13?
13 to send him out. Go on there. Report about the murder. Straight, yeah. That's his first case.
Go hear about some grisly details and report back.
He also wrote four novels, and I love the titles of these. We've got The Mad Lover, Murder at Sea, Playboy. Playboy.
Oh, Playboy. Okay.
What did you say? Playboy?
I thought he said Playboy. I'm like, is that a pun on Playboy that I don't understand?
But my favorite is his last novel, published in 1937. It's just called What Ho?
Oh.
Exclamation mark.
Should be Witch Ho. Especially the first couple sounded like books that you wrote as a child a bit.
Honestly, reading this short story back, it does feel a bit like something that I wrote when I was young.
Oh yeah? The best known short story of all time.
No,
rings
it's funny.
A few bells to you.
It's one of those things where it jumps through the plot so quickly. Because this is very much could be a novel, I think. Right. Very much. I think that he was writing to the medium. He had to put in the short story. So, which, you know, the payoff is that it's very fast-paced.
Right.
There's no wasted word.
Yeah, I love love it. Well, because it was, where was it published again?
Collier's.
Collier's, a magazine. Yeah. You got to get to the point. Those Collier readers, they're not patient.
No.
They're not going to sit around and wait for you to build up a plot over years. I want to get to the freaking point.
Get to the action. Connell was twice Oscar nominated as a screenwriter, but he really excelled in the short story medium, becoming one of the most popular American short story writers of his time. The Most Dangerous Game is his most famous creation, and it has been adapted numerous times for radio, TV, and film. Wikipedia.org lists 20 different feature films based on, or at least inspired by, the plot.
What, any ones that I would have heard of?
Well, the first one is in 1932, called The Most Dangerous Game.
Okay.
And the most recent one was 2022, also called The Most Dangerous Game.
Really?
So, yeah, still 90 years later, people are adapting it.
So, who was in the most recent one?
There was no one I'd heard of, but you might have heard of the TV adaptation from 2020. There was a series that debuted on the doomed streaming platform Quibi.
Quibi.
Do you remember Quibi?
It vaguely rings a bell.
Where it was like, I think it was
sounds
like...
Sounds adorable.
It was supposed to be like 7 or 8 minute episodes of stuff that you'd watch on your phone.
Oh, right. Yep.
And I think they raised billions of dollars and then it absolutely flopped.
Quibi. So
they had to shut it down within the year and they sold it on. But they had a series called Most Dangerous Game starring Liam Hemsworth and Christoph Waltz.
Holy shit. That sounds too big to fail. Or too small to fail in this case. At only 7 minutes apiece.
Well, I think they stitched all the 7 minute clips together to make a movie that you can now watch as one.
Right.
But I haven't seen it. But they're two good actors in there.
Yeah. One of the Hemsworths.
Yeah.
One of the Waltzes.
When I get through this story, you tell me which character you reckon Christoph Waltz is playing, because I think it will probably be obvious.
Okay. I reckon he's the one. He's the games master of The Most Dangerous Game. Liam Hemsworth is the games player.
You've already got it. You've already got it. That's absolutely true. There's the guy playing Joe Regular, played by Hemsworth, of course.
His name's Joe Regular. Joe Regular? That's so great.
No, that's not really his name, but okay. You know, they were trying to be like... Matt, I think
no wonder this is a classic. with
Joe Regular. He's a twice Oscar-nominated screenwriter. Come on, he's not writing Joe Regular. That's Dave Warnke.
So what's in your version of it? It's Joe Regular's is the Hemsworth. What's the other character's name?
In the
Warnke verse,
Phil Doom.
Phil Doom. Fantastic.
And you're like, which one's the bad guy?
Who's the average Joe? And who is the bad guy?
Mr.
I don't have time to explain. It's only 7 minutes. Yeah, it needs to be clear right off the bat.
I don't know how the pilot's like. It must be so quick.
They probably also have very evil music whenever Bill Doom's on screen. And just very light and fluffy music when regular... What is his name?
Joe Regular.
Joe Regular's on stage. on screen.
And then, yeah, Joe Regular, everyone's just like, what a cool dude every time he leaves the scene.
Yeah, his hat's on backwards. So you can tell.
All right, how about we start with the opening line, as I always do, to set the scene, give you a bit of the Connell magic to set it up.
Fantastic.
Right, it's a quote. It starts with, "Off there, to the right somewhere, is a large island," said Whitney. "It's rather a mystery." "What island is it?" Rainsford asked. "The old charts call it Ship Trap Island," Whitney replied. "A suggestive name, isn't it? Sailors have a curious dread of the place. I don't know why. Some superstition." And we're off.
Wow, that... Ship Trap Island sounds like something 9-year-old Dave Warnke would write, for sure.
Yes, totally. Pardon me, Joe Regular?
Ship Trap Island, fantastic. Well, that's ominous. So they're on a ship.
They're on a ship near Ship Trap Island. So it is an ominous start, you're right.
And the next line there, already on Ship Trap Island, and then the line after that, it's the end. Is that sort of that short this is?
That's what Collier's liked.
And, yeah, everyone lived happily ever after, apart from the ones who died. We don't have time to tell you which.
Well, we've just met two characters there. Whitney and Rainsford.
Whitney, a.k.a. Joe Regular?
No, Rainsford is Joe Regular.
Rainsford's Joe Regular. Whitney is Captain Doom.
No, Whitney is just...
just some guy.
Mr. Unimportant. Okay. Rick Unimportant.
Wow, why give such a great name to someone who's not important? Yeah. Whitney. Whitney's a fantastic name.
Whitney. They are both Americans traveling on a ship in the Caribbean, and they're both big game hunters on their way to Rio de Janeiro to go hunting in the Amazon.
Okay. What are they hunting? What's that? What are you hunting in the Amazon?
Piranhas.
Yep.
Trees. parrot.
Parrot. The one parrot.
Yeah.
Parrot's plural for parrot, is it? A hunting parrot. Probably is. That sounds right, actually. Sorry. Apologies.
I don't know. Yeah, what's the biggest...
They'd have some monkeys over there, surely.
Yeah.
That'd be where all the New World monkeys are, probably in the Amazon.
I've actually just looked up biggest animal in South America, and we've got... Oh, this is tragic, because they're one of my favorite animals, the capybara.
Oh, right. Beautiful also, big animal.
Yeah, they're beautiful. Also, tapirs.
Oh, yeah. Another fantastic animal.
And then the green anaconda.
That's a big animal, right?
Yeah, that's one of the big ones. But number four on the list is piranha. So there you go.
Squirrel monkeys are also in the Amazon. You can't hunt squirrel monkeys.
No.
Surely not.
Oh, there's jaguars.
Oh, yeah. That's the kind of stuff that they like.
Yeah. And cougar.
Yep.
Alpaca.
Alpaca. Is it from the Paca family?
Yeah, that's right. Heir to the Paca dynasty. Al, get in here.
Yeah, James is not cutting mustard, mate. Cutting mustard. I looked that up the other day because I said cutting the mustard. And I'm like, wait, is it cutting the mustard or cutting muster? And then I'm like, or is it passing muster? And I looked it up and it is two separate sayings, passing muster and cutting the mustard.
Oh.
And I think that means something vaguely similar.
There you go.
I literally looked it up yesterday and I've already lost the information. And people are yelling at their iPods right now. That's not why they tune into Book Cheat. They tune in for answers, not questions.
Yeah, exactly. English explained, not questioned.
You familiar with those sayings though, Dave?
Yeah, I think I've heard them both, but I would have been like, oh, which is which?
Yeah.
Do you cut or pass mustard?
I'm passing on the mustard, thank you.
Passing on the mustard.
Happy with just the tomato sauce on my hot dog, thank you very much.
So if you eat too much mustard, you'll probably start passing mustard, if you know what I mean.
Oh, that's true too. I thought this was a highbrow podcast.
It is. We're going to talk about Whitney and Rainsford. So they're hunters on the way to Rio. As they travel through the pitch black night on their ship, which is described as being like moist velvet.
Okay, that doesn't sound good.
They talk about hunting. This is a quote from the book. The best sport in the world, agreed Rainsford. For the hunter, amended Whitney, not for the jaguar.
Okay. So it is the jaguar thereafter.
That's their big thing. And then he says, don't talk rot, Whitney, said Rainsford. You're a big game hunter, not a philosopher. Who cares how a jaguar feels? Perhaps the jaguar does, observed Whitney.
Yes, Whitney, that's right.
Yes. Standing up for the jaguar there. But Rainsford, he's having none of it. In his world, there are two classes, the hunter and the huntees. And Rainsford says, luckily, you and I are hunters.
Ooh, that sounds like he's setting up some irony or something there.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't want to leap to the end or anything, but is the hunter about to become the hunted?
Our Joe Regular?
Because that really is what this feels. Feels like that is laying it on pretty thick. That's a thick layer of mustard right there.
Oh, yeah. Is this passing the muster? I don't know.
It's hard to say when you don't know what it means.
Well, their conversation then returns to the so-called Ship Trap Island, which has a bad reputation that spooks the crew and even the seasoned Swedish captain.
And they're normally unflappable, seasoned Swedish captains.
Absolutely. A seasoned Swede, one of my favourite things.
Seasoned Swede, they normally, they've seen it all.
But he's terrified. And Whitney himself got a chill when they got near to it.
Whoa. Were they multiplying? That's when you know it's bad. Or good.
Either or.
You start losing control. Whoa.
Whoa. But there's just something off about the place. It's one of those places you can just feel something going on. Whitney thinks evil is tangible in wavelengths, like light and sound. And this place, you can really just sense, you can taste the evil.
Wow. And it tastes bad.
It tastes bad. Ow.
Oh, bit tangy. Bit too tangy.
Not for
I don't
me.
Mind a bit of tang, but not this is me. Not for me.
Too much tang. So he says, there's evil in this place. And with that, Whitney heads off to bed.
All right, not all.
Not, see you later. Rainsford, aka Joe Regular, stays to smoke another pipe on the deck alone. And while smoking, he hears the unmistakable sound of gunshots, three in total, coming from the supposed direction of the mysterious Ship Trap Island. He can't see anything as he strains his eyes in the darkness, and hoping to get a better view, he stands up on the ledge of the ship. But as he climbs up, because it's so dark, his pipe is struck by a rope and is knocked out of his mouth. And as he reaches to grab it, he loses his footing and falls off the side of the boat into the warm Caribbean water below.
Oh, that sounds all right.
Yeah, it's nice. Even though it's dark, beautiful warm water.
Yeah. But
It's such a clumsy thing. His pipe gets knocked by a rope and he goes, oh, 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 oh.
When you say got struck by, I was sure you were going to say lightning. So,
hey, there's two things in this world you can get struck by. One's lightning, the other is rope.
Yeah, there's some really unlucky people who've been struck by rope multiple times in their life.
Rope doesn't strike twice, but that's wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. You're more likely to win lotto than be struck by rope. Is that true?
That's true.
I've never been struck by rope, I don't
Me
think.
Neither. But you have won the lotto.
I have multiple times won the lotto. That's why true. I'm sitting here on a pile of cash.
Wow.
Might have been wondering why that was.
Yeah, you look unstable.
Yeah. I feel like I'm also at the Caribbean. I could fall into the warm waters at any
Honestly,
moment.
If you just traded like two or three of those bills for a chair, you'd be much more comfortable.
Oh, yeah. That feels a bit risky. I think I'll take the money, thanks. Yeah. You're more of a what's in the box kind of guy, not me. I'll always take the money.
Yeah.
I see any product as something in a box.
You assume it comes in a box.
Yeah. And I'm not going to go with what's in the box. I'll take the money, thanks, Burjo.
You keep ordering stuff from the internet, stuff arrives in a box, and you're like, well, I'm not taking that.
No, I'll take the money. A lot of refunds. Most of my life is doing refunds.
Your wife's doing refunds.
I've got a wife who does refunds.
Wow,
that's
that
her
is,
main task.
That is wealthy.
Yeah,
that's true wealth. All right, so Rainsford, okay, Joe Regular, he's in the warm Caribbean water. He tries to yell out to the boat, but it quickly disappears into the darkness. He's all alone now.
Oh no, this boat couldn't hear him. He should have yelled out to the people on the boat. He would have had a better chance.
Captain. No, he's yelling out, boat.
Boat. Boat, can you hear me? Yeah. And the captain's going, well, oh, it's not talking to me. I guess I'll keep sailing.
Yeah, looking around. Huh, I don't see any boat here.
You're on a boat, Captain. But the captain's very specific. No, this is a ship. This is not a boat.
That's his thing. So Rainsford decides to swim for the island in the direction of the shots that he heard, and as he's swimming, he hears an animal screaming out in pain before the sound of a pistol silences it forever.
Oh.
So he swims on and makes it to the rocky edge of the island, just, and immediately falls asleep from exhaustion. He really had to swim a long way.
Right. But in the beautiful warm waters.
Yeah, that's right.
Beautiful. Would have probably been a delight.
Yeah, exactly. So he's in a tropical paradise. He really has to remember where he is.
Yeah. He's like, crazy. Mate, stop complaining. People keep handing him cocktails in coconut shells. What are coconut? Are they coconut shells?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
And he keeps yelling, but I need a boat. A boat.
He's like, well, we call this cocktail boozy boat. So enjoy.
Shut up and drink. Waking up the next afternoon, Rainsford explores the island and finds a spent rifle cartridge. He reasons this must mean humans are on the island who can save him. So he wanders around, and just as it's beginning to get dark again, he spies at first what he thinks must be a mirage. It's a giant chateau on the edge of a cliff.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like a Nissan Mirage.
Yeah, is this a mirage? Oh, I'd actually prefer a Maxima.
Yeah, that's a zippy little number. Sure, it'll get you from A to B, but I'm looking for a boat.
Yeah, a Nissan boat.
Okay, it's a whole Nissan dealership, but they only sell mirages. Mm.
He's like tapping it. Is this coming a boat?
And I know you've got American listeners. I'd be like, what are you talking about? How do they say it?
Nissan.
Nissan. Ah, it's so fun. I love cultural differences.
Me too. My favorite is Hyundai. Hyundai.
They say Hyundai.
That's good stuff.
Oh, yeah. What? There's a song that says drive off in a Hyundai. A Kanye song, I reckon.
Yeah.
That's what he was talking about?
I didn't get the context at all. So he sees this chateau in the middle of an island, in the middle of nowhere. He's like, this can't be real. But then he touches the door and he's like, it's real.
Whoa. So one of the two doors on the Nissan Mirage.
He's knocking. He's knocking on the door. He's like, mate, knock on the window. They can see you. So he knocks on the door of the Mirage. And it's answered by a giant bearded man who points a gun at Rainsford.
Oh.
The giant's name is...
You're never going to sell cars with that kind of attitude.
He hasn't made a sale in a while. He's getting desperate, old Gil.
Gun to your head. Will you buy this Nissan Mirage?
Well, the giant's name is Ivan. He is both deaf and mute, and is almost like... I imagine a James Bond-esque henchman.
Right. Unless like a literal giant? Like a mythical creature or just a really big human?
I think like a 6'10", massive dude.
Right.
That sort of wanders
around.
An NBA
basketballer sort of thing.
Yeah. But one who never says a word.
A ruckman.
Yep.
It's sort of like a Peter Spider Everett.
Kind of.
Or a Lazar Vidovic.
Yes.
Who I think actually, after footy, ran a Nissan car dealership.
I think after footy, he became a henchman, so...
He was a henchman on the footy field. He retired from all that.
Yeah. Wow. Hopefully he can get me a Micra.
It's like genuinely, he was a car salesman after. I hope it was for Nissan.
One can only dream. So Ivan, he's got the gun pointed at Rainsford, but he's called off by another man who comes to the door, General Zaroff, who appears and invites Rainsford inside. Zaroff praises Rainsford, saying that he's read his famous books on hunting. And so at this point, we realize that Rainsford, he's a famous hunter. You're like, okay.
Ah.
And he invites Rainsford in to dress and join him for dinner. He arranges a very expensive
suit. He was nude at this point.
He's like, get it off. Or get it on.
Get it on, please, mate. We're trying to eat here. We're trying to eat chops, not look at chops, mate, okay?
Just of those three characters, which do you think is Christoph Waltz?
Oh, it's definitely the giant.
definitely the
guy inside the house. I forget his name already, but...
General Zaroff.
General Zaroff.
He's like,
that's going to be Christoph.
I'm a big fan.
And perfect for that role. You know, I can see him, you know, he's just sort of like very polite, but also
yes.
fully... you know that just below the surface, he's a psychopath.
Absolutely. Like, so intense, but so polite. So you couldn't be like, you're being really rude, or you couldn't call anything out. It's just a feeling he gives, isn't it?
I can picture him with like a napkin dabbing his mouth saying, welcome, welcome. Yes. No, no, please do stay.
Yes. Oh, more peas? I love peas. And you're like, this is fucking weird.
And then he'd do a monologue about peas.
Yes.
A story from his childhood where he ate peas. Yes, that's
right. It would be a flashback. Wouldn't it be, mother never let us have peas. And then, like, it's a story where he ends up killing his stepfather by, like, stuffing his nostrils full of peas or something.
Yeah.
My first kill. Over dinner, which is in a giant room surrounded by the heads of hunted animals, General Zaroff explains that he's been hunting his whole life and travelled the world, but eventually got tired of it because it all got a bit boring. Animals, he says, are always outwitted by humans. But now, on the island, he hunts a different kind of animal that has reasoning and presents the ultimate challenge. Ooh. And Rainsford is like, what animal? And Zaroff keeps dancing around the answer, doing a Christoph Waltz-style monologue, talking about reasoning and animals. Yeah. And Rainsford keeps asking, okay, but what animal do you hunt here? If it's so clever, so smart, what's the challenge? What is it? Until eventually, he realizes that Zaroff means he hunts human beings.
Yeah, it felt pretty clear from the right off the bat there, average Joe. But
yeah, come on, man. Rainsford says, hunting? Great guns, General Zaroff. What you speak of is murder.
This is, it's like, it's so I'm guessing this was written as like an animal rights thing, or is it, or is there some level here I'm missing?
Well, as you said before, it's like the hunter becoming the hunted.
Yes.
You're right, absolutely.
But it feels like, you know, they're going, hey, you know, put yourself in the animal's shoes. And then they'll be like, animals don't wear shoes. And then they'll be like, what about horses? Horses wear shoes. Like, well, not always. Wild horses don't wear shoes. That's just something that humans do to them for some reason. They nail shoes to their feet. It's weird. And they'll say, well, no, it's like, I think it, for some reason it helps the horses. It, you know, I don't understand it, but it does. And did you know that horses' hooves are really just like, they used to have toes and now it's just sort of like one toe and a big toenail? And then they'll be like, whoa, that's weird. What was the question again? You know what I mean?
Is this a direct quote from a conversation you've had? About horses?
Oh, yeah. No, but it feels like that's what they're doing. They're going, hey. They're laying it on so thick about it. Well, I bet the animals probably don't enjoy it. Or yep. Is this... Because this is a long time ago. It feels like it would be... people didn't care about animals 100 years ago, did they?
Did they even have animals back then?
Yeah, when did animals get invented? You know what, Dave? I think the most dangerous animal of all is the human.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. It's a bit of an interesting take I have.
Would you describe them as the most dangerous game?
Ew. Oh, my God.
Game meaning thing you hunt?
Wow. Yeah, I would. That's good.
So, Rainsford's there. He's like saying... This is Joe Regular. That's murder. What are you talking about? That's just killing. And Zaroff just can't understand his logic. He's like, well, you killed people in the war, didn't you?
Yeah.
And Rainsford's like, that's different. Zaroff says, life is for the strong, to be lived by the strong, and, if needs be, taken by the strong. The weak of the world were put here to give the strong pleasure. I am strong. Why should I not use my gift? If I wish to hunt, why should I not? And Rainsford's like, okay, well, who do you hunt then? And Zaroff explains that he uses lighting and beacons to purposefully shipwreck people on the island.
Oh, I would have called it Shipwreck Island.
Well, he guides people towards the rocks. He then offers them shelter in order for them to recover and even offers them some combat training, but they, which means they must be like, what? Okay, why are you teaching me this? But okay.
Yeah.
And then he eventually offers them the chance to play his game in exchange for their freedom. Zaroff says these are the rules of the game. It's a game, you see. I suggest to one of them that we go hunting. I give him a supply of food and an excellent hunting knife. I give him 3 hours head start. I am to follow, armed only with a pistol of the smallest caliber and range. If my quarry eludes me for 3 whole days, he wins the game. If I find him, the general smiled, he loses.
That sounds like a pretty fair game. Apart from the fact that he's got a gun and they've got a knife.
Totally. I feel like the other person should have a gun.
But I guess in the same way that, you know, animals don't have guns. The leopards or whatever don't have guns.
So he's like, what I do, I give them 3-hour head start, I nail horseshoes to their feet, and then I let them go.
And I nail sharp teeth into their mouth. So, yeah. And is he what's he travelling on foot as well?
Yeah, they're all on foot.
But he knows the terrain so much better.
That's true.
Yeah. So it's not that fair. If they were dropped off in a neutral zone, I think I'd give each of them an even chance maybe, but because he's got the home ground advantage.
He lives there, yeah. And Rainsford asks, okay, well, what if they win? And Zaroff says, he's never lost.
Mm.
He says, one time he almost did, and then he had to use his dogs. So he's also got hunting dogs on his side.
Right. Yeah, that feels like cheating.
Yeah, it's like, I'm about to lose. Oh, get the dogs.
Yeah, that's like the humans who hunt foxes and stuff. They use dogs. Like, you're not doing anything.
No, that's right.
You're just looking nice riding around on a horse.
Rainsford says, well, what if people refuse to play? And Zaroff counters that they're welcome to choose that option, but then Ivan, the giant, will take care of them. And he used to work as a torturer for the Tsar, so they always end up agreeing. Right. So it's like, either you take your chances in the game, or he'll murder you painfully and slowly.
I'll play the game, I guess.
Okay, fine. Okay, all right. But I want to be the car. No, the hat.
I'd be the car, honestly. I'd be the Nissan Mirage, and I'd drive off
into
the sunset.
Why did I choose the hat? Stupid to choose the hat.
Sun protection, I guess, but...
Yeah. Is it a bulletproof hat? Rainsford is sickened by the thought, and Zaroff tells him that once he begins the hunt, he'll come to see it as the ultimate challenge. But Rainsford declines to join Zaroff on tonight's hunt, and instead goes to bed, failing to sleep as he's so upset by what he's heard. As he begins to finally drift off, the sound of a distant pistol shot wakes him. So Zaroff's just killed another person.
So that noise that he heard before of an animal crying out, that animal was a human animal.
That animal was Derek. Sorry, Derek.
That animal was Derek from Accounts.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So, I mean, and Rainford at this point doesn't see that this is all about to happen to him?
He has no idea. He thinks...
How does he not see Zaroff, that as a possibility?
Zaroff has invited him to hunt. He's like, oh, well, I'm going to get invited on the hunt. Okay.
Right.
The next,
for some training.
The next day, Zaroff and Rainsford again dine.
He should have gone out on the hunt. He could have then seen what Zaroff does.
Yeah.
Would have been an advantage. Yep. If he was looking ahead at all.
Or like killed him or something.
Yeah, that's true. If he had a gun, he could have just killed him and saved a lot of people's lives.
Can I have a gun? But the next day they again dine, and Zaroff complains that the sailors he hunts are no longer a challenge. He's like, they always just run in a straight line, and I get him like 3 hours later. It's so boring.
He gets him in 3 hours and he gives him a 3-hour head start? He's cheating. He's cheating.
I forgot to tell you, they are wearing a homing beacon.
Yeah, okay. So I wonder what kind of way he could escalate the challenge somehow. Maybe if the person he was hunting was also a master hunter?
Yeah. Oh, okay. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah, God, just an option.
I was thinking just a 4-hour head start, but that's much better.
Yeah, that's true. Could give him a 24-hour head start.
Oh.
If you really want a challenge, maybe don't use the dogs. I want to make it a bigger challenge. Well, how about you just do it yourself then?
The dog.
Without horses and dogs.
Yeah, and do you need the gun? Go hand to hand.
Yeah. Knife on knife.
Knife on knife. Or
bring a knife to a knife fight.
Honestly, the real challenge would be if he still stuck to animals but just did it hand to hand, like him versus a lion.
Yeah.
Like, if you can kill it naturally, that's impressive, I guess.
Yeah. Or, yeah, I don't think you can.
No.
I think you'll find that the challenge is pretty good.
Yeah.
The challenge, he lost the challenge because it was so far in his advantage.
Yeah.
And the next thing, if he's going to try and hunt Rainsford, it's still in his advantage. He doesn't really want a challenge. He just wants it to be slightly less really easy.
Yeah, he wants a challenge that he's guaranteed to still win.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like him.
Well, Rainsford, he demands to leave the island at once, but Zaroff tells him, tonight they will hunt. Rainsford at first says, no, I'm not going out on a hunt. Until it slowly dawns on him, Matt, that Zaroff means that he will hunt him. He hopes that as a fellow great hunter, Rainsford will finally be the challenge he's been looking for. He says, you'll find this game worth playing, the general said enthusiastically. Your brain against mine. Your woodcraft against mine. Your strength and stamina against mine. Outdoor chess, as you said, Matt.
Ooh.
And the stake is not without value, eh?
I hope they see themselves as queens, because... It's the only one you can really move anywhere you want.
Yeah, that's right. If you choose the king, you're like, ah, shit.
Ah, this is going to be slow going.
This is really boring.
Or if you're the knight, it's very odd. You're taking very odd paths. You're like, you go on a straight line for a three, and then, unfortunately, a step either way is certain death, but
yeah,
you are a knight.
Sorry.
So
obviously.
You're going to fall into the Amazon.
Chivalry. I like the line, your woodcraft against mine, like they're going to do some sort of wood competition.
Yeah.
Who can make the best shelf? He promises to let Rainsford go if he hasn't found and killed him by midnight on the third day. And with that, he supplies Rainsford with clothes, food, a hunting knife, and a pair of moccasins, as they don't make noise in the forest. And he tells him, you go get your head start. I'm going for a siesta. I'll start following you at dusk.
Oh, I mean, he even gets a siesta.
Yeah, that's right.
I love moccasins. Because they're not the Australian-style moccasins, which are obviously the words have been borrowed from America. But,
yes.
But yeah, I think of moccasins are like sort of comfy slippers over here.
They're great.
And I guess they're kind of comfy. They're comfy shoes over there too. I remember looking it up a while ago, and they look totally different though.
But they still, I'm looking at them now. They still don't look like that great a hunting shoe or boot.
So they look like they'd get soaked. You know, because it's all kind of a cloth. It's all soft, isn't it?
Yeah, they look soft. Yeah, like you're right. It looks like if you step in a puddle, you're absolutely screwed.
You're going to be squelching for the rest of the hunt. It's so much easier to be found when you're squelching.
Yep.
Which kind of moccasin would you wear on a hunt if you had the choice? The Australian moccasin or the original moccasin?
Well, I like my feet to be nice and toasty at all times, so I'm going for the Australian slipper-style moccasin.
Yeah.
How about you?
They got a bit of a firm rubber sole on them normally as well, don't they?
Yeah, and I think they're often made of sheepskin and that stuff. That's still warm when it gets wet.
Yeah, sheep... Well, I mean, they've tested it out there in the cold for centuries.
They know what they're doing.
Maybe even decades. Yeah. A long time. Yeah, I think I'd go with the Aussie ones as well.
Right.
You know, there used to be a joke. This is the first I really heard about moccasins. Friends of mine lived in Maui in country Victoria, in Gippsland. Do you know what the old joke about Maui is?
No.
It was a very old joke, maybe. It was that Maui is spelt MOE, and the joke was it stands for moccasins on everyone.
I've never heard that.
Which, I mean, I'm like, I didn't really get the joke because I'm like, well, yeah, everyone's wearing comfortable shoes.
Yeah, great, cool.
Cop that. But it was sort of like a snooty joke, I guess.
So they're not even saying it's so cold.
You should be wearing R.M. Williams.
Oh, so it's not that, I thought
like Dave.
That's right. Keep my feet toasty. But what about, I thought when he said the joke is that it's so cold there, everyone's got to warm their feet.
Oh, maybe that is the joke. Oh, that's a good point. Maybe it's because it is cold in Gippsland. Maybe I just never understood the joke. I didn't understand it anyway, but I thought I figured it out later in life that it was a like a classist thing.
It probably is.
a cold joke.
And they've pointed that out. You're probably right. That's more likely. So, the hunt is on. Rainsford runs into the forest and creates a complicated path to track, doubling back on himself several times, purposely running in circles, so he's difficult to see where he's gone. He then expertly climbs a tree, being careful not to give away his position by making marks on the ground. He sits on top of the tree and waits, and then he sees Zaroff approaching very quickly, who walks right up to the tree and blows a smoke ring in the direction of his prey, but he doesn't look up. Instead, he calmly walks away.
Oh, is he toying with him?
Yes, with that, terror fills Rainsford as he realizes Zaroff is an incredible hunter and easily found him and chose to let him continue on for another night. He's like, wow. Oh, I thought I was doing really well, but he found me straight away and basically mocked me.
That is like a tracking beacon on him for sure.
Yeah, he must have it. He decides he's got to take matters into his own hands. The next day, he lays a trap for Zaroff, something called a Malayan man catcher.
But is Zaroff a Malayan man?
Unfortunately not. No, he says...
Well, it's not going to work, is it?
He's a Cossack man, so... No, it's not going to work. It's not one size fits all.
No, he needed to use a Cossack man catcher.
Damn it.
You
think of that. So a Malayan man catcher, it's a tree trunk on a rope. Classic booby trap.
You see, he's hoping to strike him with a rope.
So Zaroff sets it off and the tree smashes into him, but he's able to dodge most of it and it only hits his shoulder.
Okay, that's still pretty good.
Still hurts him. He yells out and compliments Rainsford for his resourcefulness and says, "I'm going to return for some medical attention, but I'll come back and kill you tomorrow night."
Oh, jolly good show. We'll still be back to kill you tomorrow. Yeah,
right.
Sleep well. Ta-ta.
The next night, Rainsford sets another trap. So this is what I mean about it very much just quickly jumps through these scenarios.
Yeah.
So the next night, Rainsford sets another trap. He digs a hole in some quicksand and fills it with some sharpened stakes and covers it with grass and leaves. When Zaroff approaches, he hears what he...
covers it with grass and then he leaves.
Then what does he do? That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's another kid's joke about eats roots and leaves. What's that?
Is that a panda?
I think it's a wombat, maybe. Uh-huh. Eats roots and leaves. Because roots in Australia is boning.
That's good stuff.
For your Americans.
Yeah, that's true. You've got to point this stuff out.
Otherwise, they think, what are you talking about, a football game?
Huh?
He eats roots for his team and leaves.
Go Cowboys.
They got done this week, Dave.
Well, I'm giving them the...
Lost their quarterback as well in the game.
Where'd they lose him? It's such a small field.
They went to a shopping centre before the game. He said he was going to go get some snacks, and he never came back.
They lost him in a Wendy's. So, Rainsford set a trap. He's covered it with grass. He's left, but it's also covered in leaves. Just to be clear. When Zaroff approaches, Rainsford hears what he hopes is the hunter falling into the trap. But Zaroff calls out again and says, "Congratulations, your trap has claimed my favourite dog."
Oh, not Kenny.
Sadly, Kenny's gone.
Oh.
Again, he congratulates Rainsford and sets back for the chateau with one night left to complete his task. He's just like,
"I've lost a dog, I'll call it a night."
Yeah, he does. He
must know he's so close to him.
And he calls it off.
So, jeez, he's putting it all on the line last night.
One night.
Yeah, you're right about like another book, a full novel would be like building up suspense through each night. Is he going to make it?
Yeah, no, it just very much...
hearing noises.
It sort of punches through these scenarios.
It feels like it's a book for the modern age.
Yeah.
They say we're losing our...
What are we losing?
Vocabulary and... Wow.
Very good.
Also, our concentration span. Is that... What's the phrase? Attention span. Oh, God.
He's zoning out as he's talking about it. Reading it to me, it felt a bit like a Roadrunner Warner Brothers cartoon. Like, you know, it's just like scenario fades to the next day, new trap, new segment, new idea how to kill the other guy.
Ziggler every time's going meep meep or whatever his name is.
Ziggler. Well, the next night, which is the final night, Rainsford again sees his captor approaching, and this time accompanied by his dogs and his giant servant Ivan.
You say his dogs? His dogs minus one. Kenny, R.I.P.
That's right. This one's for UK dog. You are literally a dog.
Kenny knows that. You are literally a dog. Well, maybe Kenny doesn't know that. Do dogs know they're dogs?
No, they don't know. Huh. They don't know. So Rainsford, he sees him approaching. He decides to use a trick he learned in Uganda. He ties his knife, which remember is his only weapon, to a sapling. Hanging from a tree, tying it back with a vine.
Oh.
And then runs into the undergrowth.
And the vine was supplied by Acme.
Acme vine. He watches from afar as the group hits his trap. But instead of slicing open his hunter, Zaroff, it instead flies
into his second favorite dog.
Oh no, Rachel. Kenny and Rachel. He keeps killing these dogs.
It becomes a comedy, but the comedy is that dogs are dying. Yes.
Day 12. All right, I've only got two dogs left.
Running out of dogs.
They just keep having horrific stuff. Like a coconut falls on him and just crushes its head or something. No, I'm happy to report no more dogs die because...
Thank God. I'm a dog lover now.
The knife flies into Ivan the Giant, killing him.
Whoa. Must have got him right in the right spot.
Big man's down.
Big target, though.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So he's like, crap, Zaroff's still coming. I've only taken out the giant. So he runs away until he gets to a cliff above the sea. He can see the chateau, but a big drop is between him and the mansion. With the dogs closing in, he leaps into the water below.
And the water is warm.
Into the darkness, into the ocean. You're right, it's beautiful, warm, lovely, like a bath. He can relax now.
Finally, he's at ease, back in the warm water.
Oh, beautiful. Bath
bomb. He orders a cocktail.
I'll have another coconut boat. The general reaches the cliff top where Rainsford has leapt. This is a quote from the book again. For some minutes, he stood regarding the blue-green expanse of water. He shrugged his shoulders. Then he sat down, took a drink of brandy from a silver flask, lit a cigarette, and hummed a bit from Madame Butterfly.
Oh, the Olympic swimmer. Susie O'Neill.
Susie O'Neill. But that's very much a Christoph Waltz thing to do, isn't it? Being like, huh, yeah. Very good. And then to start...
Ah, yes. Very good.
Oh, Borat's on the island.
Very nice.
His new henchman, he replaces Ivan with Borat.
That was me generally going for, that was my best shot at German. No, Austrian. Where's Christoph from?
I think he's Austrian, yeah. That's good stuff.
I am Austrian, and he's fallen into the water. I will hum a little tune by my favorite Olympian, Susie O'Neill. Swimming through the water, yeah.
All right, back to the book to quote. It says, General Zaroff had an exceedingly good dinner in his great paneled dining hall that evening. So he's like, well, all right, back to lunch, back to dinner. Two things troubled him, however. One, how to replace Ivan. And two, what happened to Rainsford? He felt he didn't play the game properly.
Yeah. He's like the kid on Big Daddy, that Adam Sandler movie. Yeah. The rules are, I win.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
How do you play the game? I win.
That's right. That's rule number one. I always win. And you broke rule number one by not letting me win.
Yeah.
So you lose. So I win. As he says to himself, better luck next time, he notices there's a figure in the room. Rainsford has appeared.
The hunter has become the hunted, has become the hunter.
Aptly said. He says, he's like, oh, where did you go? And how'd you get here? And Rainsford says, it's easier to swim than trek through the jungle. And this is the final lines of the book. Final lines of the story. The general sucked in his breath and smiled. I congratulate you, he said. You have won the game. Rainsford did not smile. I am still a beast at bay, he said in a low, hoarse voice. Get ready, General Zaroff.
That's how it ends.
No, then it says the general made one of his deepest bows. I see, he said. Splendid. One of us is to furnish a repast for the hounds. The other will sleep in this very excellent bed. On guard, Rainsford. And then the final line is, he had never slept in a better bed, Rainsford decided.
Cup that Ziggler, you dickhead.
He got that Ziggler. I love thinking about, God, this is a good bed, as like the owner of the bed is like bleeding to death on the floor next to me.
Wow.
These pillows are fantastic. Where did he get them?
That's pretty good. Pretty satisfying ending. I don't know. Can you see Liam Hemsworth pulling off a guy in a bed like that?
Pulling off a guy in a bed.
Please let me rephrase. Do you think?
I could see that. But if that's what the role called for, of course, he's a very dedicated actor.
Could you see him portraying a man who's really enjoying a bed?
So I think I've looked it up. The modern version, or the at least that one, the Hemsworth Waltz version, is set in Detroit.
Ah, Detroit.
And the game is, Christoph Waltz is like the Zaroff type guy, and Hemsworth's been diagnosed with terminal brain cancer, and he offers him, Hemsworth, he says, well, if you play my game, I've got 5 assassins that want to kill you. Every hour you're alive, you'll make more money, and we'll leave it for your kid and your wife. But if you make it 24 hours, you'll make $24 million.
And live. Wow.
So that's the most of the movie adaptations are twists on this, but it's based on the idea of someone being hunted for sport.
Ah, interesting.
So it's super influential, and like reading it back now, the story does seem a bit basic because it is like, you know, it jumps between these little action scenes, but like the idea of the story is still really cool.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked it. So it was fun. You know, Kenny dying. Rachel dying.
Kenny and Rachel, that was sad.
That was sad. Also, big Lazar Vidovic, the Rockman giant.
The Rock, dying. Yes.
That was also sad. He'll never get to run his car dealership now.
That is good that the episode was sponsored by Nissan.
Yeah. Hopefully we can, next time we're in America, we can get a free hire of a Nissan Maxima with a sunroof.
Oh, sunroof. You're dreaming.
I liked it. What did you think of reading the full book? What did you think?
Yeah, it's a very short read, and it's very much available online if you want to just have a look. It's one of those ones that's old enough that's, I think it came out of copyright in the US a couple of years ago. So that makes me think it's going to be the basis of even more films going forward.
Yes.
But yeah, no, it's fun. It's interesting. I think that reading you have of, the hunter becoming the hunter, just to feel what it's like for once, is very much there.
Yeah, no, it's fun. I thought it was really good. I enjoyed that thoroughly. And I feel like, you know, your telling of it was beautiful.
Thank you so much.
Even better than whoever the guy who wrote it originally was.
Richard Connell, which I'd like to dedicate my version to him.
I've just Googled Lazar Vidovic, the Ruckman I kept referencing, trying to figure out if it was a Nissan dealership. But instead I found multiple articles saying former AFL player pleads guilty to forgery.
Oh, okay.
Former AFL player has pleaded guilty to forging a Melbourne magistrate's signature on statutory declarations. Former St Kilda player Lazar Vidovic has pleaded guilty to forging Magistrate Philip Goldberg's signature on 5 statutory declarations between January and September. This is back in 2004. Whoops. The county court has heard the declarations related to naming a driver responsible for traffic infringements. But the court heard Vidovic spelt Mr. Goldberg's name wrong and spelt magistrate with a J rather than a G.
Lazar. Lazar. No, he was so close to getting away with it too.
He spelled, there was two words in it. He spelled them both wrong.
He spelled the name and the word magistrate.
Oh.
Lazar. Oh, no.
That's because of that, it's so hard to find out where he sold cars because there's all the articles that come up are about this fucking forgery.
Oh, no. That is so funny and yet so sad.
Yeah.
Magistrate with a joke. Lazar, reach for the dictionary, pal.
It's almost the perfect crime.
Hey, the only thing left to do is to score the story out of 5. What do you reckon?
All right. Is it too much to give it 5?
No, if you loved it.
I think I'll give it 4.5. I thought it was, I really enjoyed it. And yeah, loved the telling of it. Loved that, love he got his comeuppance in the end.
Absolutely. He got there. I really liked it too. And I think it could have been longer. Like it was, there's such an interesting story there, but I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. Really liked it. Fantastic.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on, Dave.
Hey, thanks for coming on. It's not just films that are fully based on this. Like, it's had a big influence on popular culture. There's lots of TV shows. There's like Simpsons and Family Guy references to this.
And I found are you up for doing a Primates about one that I found a monkey version of? Dexter's Laboratory or Laboratory?
Dexter's Laboratory. Yes, I loved that show.
Yeah, there's like a spin-off show inside the show called Dial M for Monkey. And one episode apparently is based on this. It's called Huntor. So I can watch it now, all 7 minutes of it, and probably understand what's going on.
Okay.
But do you want to do a Primates about it? We can release it at the same time.
Yeah, let's put... All right, we'll make sure these
come out... Do you have a spare hour? We'll do it now.
Yeah, well, make sure these come out at the same time. So check the Primates feed and you will see, hopefully, a Dial M for Monkey. Sounds great.
Awesome.
All right, we'll watch it now. 7 minutes. And yeah, if you want to come see Matt and I live in Brisbane, we are coming up next week, as I said, or I am in Sydney on the 22nd of October, and the week before that, the 15th of October in Melbourne. And you can get tickets to all those things at dogoonpod.com. Just click live shows and bada bing, bada boom. You're going to have a great time.
I'm also coming to Perth to do some stand-up as well.
Oh, great. I'd love to get back to Perth. Yes, when are you going?
28th, 29th of October. I wonder, we'd talk about this off mic, but I wonder if we could organise some podcasts in the afternoon while I'm over there. Anyway, we'll talk about that off the show.
Yeah, I mean, if we can, that'd be fantastic. Well, thanks very much for joining me, Matt, on this little bonus episode of Book Cheat. I'll be back next week with another episode. Until then, as we always say on Book Cheat, and that is Books Forever! Thanks, everyone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.